Welcome, ladies. I am so glad you are here with me for another episode. I'm Cass, your host, and this is Her Theology. Now, we are going to explore another interesting topic today. I'm sure you would have already seen it in the title, same-sex attraction. Let me introduce you to Tracy. She is based in the UK. She is a lover of Jesus, a physio by day, heavily involved in church ministries by night, not always, not just the night, obviously weekends as well. But on a side note, she's also attracted to girls. I got Tracy onto the podcast to share her story, one that's not often addressed publicly, one that we can get a little bit awkward about sometimes, but one that is essential for the church to hear. It's powerful, it's lovingly bold, and it's incredibly life-changing. In this part one of our two-part series, we did talk for a while, so we dropped it into two for you all. We hear Tracy's testimony, how she was brought up coming to terms with her same-sex attraction, her views on the church, and then how she came to know Jesus. Not only is it an encouragement to hear how she became a Christian, but there's some really powerful lessons for us to gain in her testimony as we hear how her church rallied around her and discipled her through this process of coming to know Christ, but also learning how they addressed the biblical truths surrounding this topic that we are often a little bit afraid to discuss in relation to sex, marriage, and gender. Part two, which will come out next week, is where we dive a little bit deeper, and I got to ask Tracy a bunch of questions surrounding advice on how we can support those on a similar journey, evangelizing to our same-sex attracted friends and family, supporting those struggling with shame or maybe battling this alone, and how the church is to act, most importantly, and then also speak on the topic, along with some like resources and just other little things that we chat about. I'm really praying with this first part though, that you are just so encouraged to see the work that God is doing, but also you see how important this first part of the series is because it lays the foundation for the next episode. So it helps you understand Tracy's heart and insight for this topic. Before we go into the episode though, I'm going to leave you with this because it's a verse that I think perfectly encapsulates Tracy's testimony. Romans 1:16. For I am not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God that brings salvation to everyone who believes. Remember that. It is the power of God that brings salvation to everyone who believes. And you will hear Tracy is not ashamed of the gospel. And it is beautiful. I hope you enjoy our conversation. So I have Tracy here with me today. I'm so excited for everyone to hear from Tracy, to meet Tracy, even though you're not seeing her visually, but to hear her wonderful UK pommy voice. Can I say pom? Is it offensive to say pom?
No, I love it. My dad says that, so that's fine.
Okay, cool, awesome. Tracy has an epic testimony to share with us, but I've gotten to know Tracy over the last few weeks, is it? Yeah, a few weeks through a good friend who introduced us. And Tracy, I asked her to come on and to share her testimony because Tracy has same-sex attraction, but she's also a Christian. That's her identity. She is a Christian. She is a daughter of Christ first and foremost. She's also a physio during the day, and she does lots of stuff with ministry in the church, and she's just got a powerful testimony showing how God has used her, walked through her life, and is now using it to help support others, I guess. It's incredible. So, Tracy, welcome to Her Theology.
Thanks. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, it's good.
It's great.
So, Tracy, do you want to maybe introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your testimony? How did you become a Christian and what was that like for you?
Yeah, I think, I live in London, but I'm not from the UK. I was born in New Zealand. I went travelling after I finished school, as I guess most Kiwis and Aussies do. And then I was supposed to be a gap year. It turned into 6 years. Just did a lot of messing around, working in bars and pubs, and I did a couple of ski seasons in New Zealand and in Austria, and a lot of traveling. And lots of chasing girls. I don't know if it's helpful for me to tell you kind of what I thought before I became a Christian.
I think that is helpful, definitely.
My parents aren't particularly religious. My mum is like the the ultimate postmodernist. You know, she's like, just do whatever makes you happy. Like, she's like so wonderfully supportive. Like, I could have said, Mom, I want to be a bin man. And she would have been like, that's great, darling. You know, you do that.
Power to people.
Yeah. And she's just so lovely and accepting of everything. And my dad was kind of brought up Catholic. And even though, like, he kind of got kind of particular issues with the Catholic Church and, you know, it doesn't go or anything, it has massively influenced his worldview. You know, and he, like, he would, I think, say that he's saved because he was baptized. That sort of thing. So he, like, and he thinks the Bible, like, he thinks, like, the Bible's true. He thinks that Jesus did exist, but doesn't think that that should have any bearing on his life. So it's more like a historical document, but it doesn't really have any kind of say on how we now behave. Though he was really, really fond of saying that, you know, God says you've got to honor your parents.
That's funny how some.
And when I
really
read that bit,
stick out more than others.
I know, right? And then I read that first time. I read that bit. I think it's in Ephesians 5 where it says, like, "And parents, don't antagonize your children."
Yes.
Yeah. I was like, he never ever said that. It's like,
you don't learn
anyway,
that one in Sunday school either. No.
So we didn't really have any. My sister and I, we didn't have any kind of particular kind of church going experience growing up, except for, like, in Holland, it would be like Christmas, Easter, weddings, and funerals. Like, that's when we went to, like, full mass, the whole shebang. So kind of stuff I knew was sort of loosely from that, and then kind of the media but I basically thought it was nonsense from quite an early age. Increasingly as I then became a teenager, I realized I was gay when I was 12. And at the time it was such a huge relief because it explained quite a lot about kind of how I always thought it was a bit different and particular attachments to, like, you know, like girls and I think so that one, it was a relief, but two, like, it was also I really hated it because, you know, it made me weird, and nobody wants to be weird when they're a teenager.
And especially for us, and, like, our age group back then, it was very different compared to what it seems to be now.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Totally. Exactly. And, you know, because the people that I kind of knew who were gay, like, it was like, it was really obvious. And I was like, I don't want to look like that. I don't want to wear clothes like that. A lesbian looked like to me was just like the most, and, you know, this is really offensive, but it was like the most unattractive version of a woman, in my opinion. And I was like, I don't want to look like that. And I certainly, that is certainly not who I'm attracted to.
Probably is another conversation, but I've always wondered that a little bit. Yeah. But yeah, interesting you say that because I have wondered that.
So that I just found really depressing because I was like, okay, well, the only girls I think are really great are straight. And actually, it turns out, you know, I did have a couple of relationships when I was at secondary school. And I told my parents fairly early on because I'm really rubbish at keeping stuff from them. Yeah, my dad's first reaction, and he's, you know, he's old-fashioned, kind of gruff Dutchman. Doesn't pull any punches. And his first comment was, well, at least we don't have to worry about you coming home pregnant.
It's just not the reaction I would ever expect.
I know, isn't it? I mean, it's so practical. It's actually really Dutch because it's really practical. That was quite amusing. I guess they thought it was a phase. You know, they were really cool about it. They thought,
especially if you're
it's
younger,
not a big deal.
Yeah.
But all along, they've been really great. And so I definitely never experienced any kind of really awful homophobia. You know, you hear stories about people about kind of how their family and their friends have reacted and sort of been
designing them.
Yeah, exactly. But I found it quite hard. And then especially kind of like the bits of kind of Christian influence that I had, or Christian stuff I heard about, like, was largely associated with homophobia. Mm. So I kind of fueled this kind of thought about how this is really outdated and irrelevant, and I just thought that people just use their kind of their big old book to justify homophobia, being severely judgmental about all sorts of things about how people do life. And that made me think again, like, what is the point? Like, this is, you know, from kind of stuff I knew about Catholicism, this is for like controlling the masses, this is for, you know, financial gain, this is for power, and you're messing with people's fear of the afterlife. And it's really convenient that no one's gone and come back again, in a sense, and that you can just make that whatever you want. So I really couldn't cope with it, and I thought religion was really stupid. I think I particularly dislike Christians because I thought, like, in the West we've kind of become more individual, we care less about that kind of honoring our ancestors, that sort of family pride stuff. Whereas, like, when you look at kind of people from the Middle East or wherever, they still have very much that kind of big family unit, kind of
community,
and that kind of community, the way that they honor and respect the people that are older than them, and I was like, okay, I can kind of see why you sort of have to loosely call yourself a Muslim, because this is really a big part of who you are culturally. But it was like, kind of Westerners, I was like, what are you doing? Like, what are you holding on to? This is ridiculous. Like, we've moved past this. Like science is disproven God. We can think for ourselves, we can make decisions based on fact, rather than having to kind of appease some deity that I was pretty anti Christian things, I eventually ended up moving over here, and I met a girl. We went out for 4 years.
How old were you then?
And that was kind of, I was 21.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. And moving to London was probably the point at which I fully accepted my sexuality, because you have to be really, really weird to be weird in London. Like, being gay does not make you weird. You have to be so outrageously different. It was, suddenly it was just no big deal, my girlfriend and I, we had this just really normal life. Like, we owned a house together, we went skiing together, went to visit my parents in New Zealand, we drunk wine and watched Downton Abbey, and really normal things.
Yeah.
And it was no big deal. And people at work never talked about it any differently. People at uni, I was at uni, it was just, how's your girlfriend? Super normal. And I was like, I've made it. This looks good. And then that relationship ended shortly after I finished university, because I did obviously decide eventually that I should go to uni and do physio, and I realized I could do that over here, which is great. I didn't have to go back to New Zealand. Finished, and then that relationship ended, and like, my world just fell apart in a massive way. It felt very much like I just completely lost my identity, because I basically didn't have any friends that weren't our mutual friends. And so that kind of went. The house, the kind of the life, everything that went with it, everything I was actually just really proud of, was just gone. I moved into a flat owned by a friend of my sister's. I lost my job as well, and there was one particular low point was when I was like, I hadn't talked to another human being for like 5 days once. And I was like, gosh, what's happened? And I, yeah, and then eventually I kind of went, right, you've got to sort yourself out. So I you know, I finished uni. I was like, I've got to find a physio job. So I applied, and then I started working with a physio who was a Christian. I knew that pretty much straight away because she'd been on a church weekend away, like the one I was talking about. And I was like, okay, got to like note that and not talk about it. Because my old job I had while I was at uni, I just really enjoyed kind of the Christian baiting, you know, actually lots of Christians are really poorly taught and it's really easy to tie them up into, you know, and where they sort of can't really defend, their faith. And, but I was at the bottom of the pile here. So, you know,
you can't be a smart ass.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so I was like, okay, let's not talk about that. About 3 weeks in, we worked in critical care together. So helping to rehab people that have been really unwell. We went to see about 3 weeks in. Yeah, we went to see this man who had several strokes, and he wasn't like he would have his eyes open, but he wouldn't fix and follow. So you really didn't know what was going on. So there was no kind of communication there. He wouldn't. What we did is we sat him on the edge of the bed. And so my job is to then be on the bed behind him. So he's sort of, I've got like kind of him against my chest. I'm in kind of a high kneeling position on the bed. And she, this other physio, is in front of him. And then she said, we're going to sit here for a while. I could tell you about the weather, the football results, but I'm sure you'd rather I read to you from your Bible. And so she picks up this man's like big King James, like it's his Bible.
Like, great.
I was like in my head, I was like, what are you doing, you crazy Christian? You know, you know, and probably there were some swear words in there in my thinking. I was I was like, this isn't physio. What are you doing? I couldn't leave. Like he would have fallen off the bed if I just got up. And it was his Bible. Like she's not like she brought a Bible along to like read to this man who couldn't object. Like, so I just had to, I had to sit there and I had to listen. I had to listen. And she chose Psalm 23. You know, the Lord is my shepherd. And the thing is at this point, things I'd heard from the Bible were the kind of Leviticus 18:20.
Yeah.
It's an abomination to lie
with
them, you know. yeah. And like kind of Ten Commandment type stuff.
Horrible.
And you know, and I expected to hear that kind of thing. So when she reads Psalm 23, I was really surprised, and my immediate knee-jerk reaction to her finishing, because let's face it, it's not a very long psalm, was to be disappointed that she'd stopped reading. And then I was really angry at myself for feeling that way. And like it sort of felt like a betrayal in a sense. Like that was just a weird experience. We finished up our rehab session it was a bit awkward and we didn't talk about it at all. She actually later on told me that she thought I'd go straight to HR about it. And then a few days later we were walking down a corridor at work and I sort of said to her, hey, next time you go read the Bible to a patient, can I come along? And she sort of just went, you know, we could just read the Bible together. And I was like, no, that's weird. And then later on that day, we were walking to the bike shed and I sort of asked her what she's up to. And she was going to, you know, small group evening at church. And I was like, oh, wow, you go twice a week? That's so weird. And she, you know, she sort of said they serve different purposes, you know. Yeah. And then she said, but, I've got some time to kill. Do you want to go for a coffee? And so then we sort of had this chat where I wasn't a jerk, but I kind of went in with, well, you're clearly a proper Christian. you know, so you must hate gay people and people that have sex before marriage and people that have abortions. She just went, I don't hate people. And she was so clear. She just said, I believe that the Bible is God's word. I therefore hold it as my highest authority. And I try and live my life in a way that honors him. But if you don't even think he exists, then who am I to tell you that this is how you should live your life? And nobody, any of the Christians I'd ever talked to before had ever said anything like that. It was always, you know, kind of on the high horse, this is not okay with God. That's not okay with God. Mm-hmm. This is what you should do. And so for her to kind of say that was just, I was really disarming. It wasn't expected, what I expected at all.
It's a great response.
Yeah. And it just led to a discussion, you know, you know, we talked through a few of those things. She, you know, she got her ESV app out on her phone and kind of, you know, went to various bits of the Bible and, you know, asked me a lot of questions about kind of, my experience of church, of the Bible, that sort of thing. I think that was really great. She really acknowledged the fact that actually so many Christians get this wrong or a poor representation of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And you know, lots of churches have done a lot to actually push people away from the gospel.
Yeah.
Straight into what does the Bible say? And not necessarily in the kind of let's go to these passages, but in a kind of this is what Jesus is like. She said, you know, when we finished up, she said, can I bring you in one of the books of the Bible to read? And I was like, which one? And she said, well, there's 66 books in the Bible, 4 of them about Jesus's life, and Mark's gospel is the shortest. And I was like, okay, it was very logical. You can bring it in, but I'm not going to promise that I'm going to read it.
She knew her audience. That was a good approach.
Yeah. I know, right? I went home. I was just thinking about all the things that we talked about. And because I'd seen this ESV app on her phone, I was like, ha, you just download the Bible. Who knew? So I downloaded it on my Kindle and I read Mark's gospel and a few other bits of New Testament. And then next day at work, she kind of came over and was like, oh, I've got that gospel for you. And I was like, I don't need it. I've read it. She's like, okay, have you got any questions? And I was like, yeah, like 100. So we had a beer after work. We chatted through like kind of, you know, things that like just my random thoughts, like why is Jesus such an ass to the disciples on the boat, you know, like they think they're gonna die, why is he being a jerk, like, you know, like all these kind of these random thoughts I had. And she was like, let's do it properly, let's read through it from start to finish, bit by bit. She said, and I was like, okay, fine. So we'd sort of do a chunk at a time, you know, chapter and a half at a time. And she would just tell me, you know, to think about what Jesus was doing and how people were responding to him. And then like any kind of specific questions I had about things I didn't understand. And so we did that and we'd go and hang out on the South Bank after work with a beer and read Mark's gospel together. And again, I kind of thought, you know, does God not mind that we're like reading the Bible and drinking beer? And she was like, God doesn't mind. Like, I was like, okay. I had no idea.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think that's a big thing. We just sometimes as Christians, the further along in the faith, we sometimes like jump the gun and assume things, but then you've got to remember people are just got a totally different perception of Christianity and we just
need to
go to the basics. Like,
absolutely. And so I did that and I really enjoyed that. You know, it was intellectually stimulating. I felt very convicted of my own beliefs. I found what she thought interesting, and I wasn't afraid of being converted. It's not like I wanted to be like, I don't want to hear, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, this is interesting. You know, at the very least, it's kind of it's you know, knowledge is power, like it's ammo. You know?
Yeah.
And I think I enjoyed doing that. I found it absolutely astonishing that she wanted to spend her time doing that with me. She kept inviting me to church. I didn't want to go. I was really, really reluctant about it. I was like, no way. Like, I've been in church buildings. No. I found like a vaguely sort of normal person who talks like a normal person and is interesting, and there can't possibly be any more of them. So I was like, I resisted for a few months. And then I ended up meeting some of her friends from church at various points, and I was like, okay, that's interesting.
Not too weird.
So eventually I was like, okay, and I was working on the Sunday, and I thought, well, I'll go see where it is, because St. Helens is in the middle of the the business area of the city. If you don't work in the city, like, what, and you're not going to St. Helens, you have no idea where anything is. So I was like, I'll just cycle over and see where it is. And I knew I was going to be late, so it was just about figuring out where it was. So I rock up at about 6:10, and people are still entering. I was like, okay, that's weird. Like, surely they should have all been sitting down at 6.
Welcome to church life.
Exactly. I was like, okay. So then I thought, oh, okay, I'll go have a look in the window, or the door rather. And there's obviously this really lovely young man standing there with like a service sheet, and I was like, can I come in? Like, and I had all my cycling gear on, right? Like spandex, the clippy shoes, like everything.
You're like full bike riding. Okay.
Yeah. I was like, can I come in? I don't have any other clothes with me. Like, again, like kind of this like understanding that you've got to like dress up for church, you know? Because both in Holland, kind of Catholic church, and then like
Dutch,
sort of Polynesians in New Zealand going to church as well. Like get dressed up for church, you know? So I was like, I haven't got any other clothes. And he just went, you're wearing clothes, you can come in. So I did. I sat along the back, what they call the Bible shelf, my friend was in the band. She got up to play, spotted me, looked really rather surprised, and then came over to sit with me, it was really interesting. I remember really well the sort of first time I was there. I couldn't quite get over how different it was to what I expected. So William Taylor, our rector, was preaching on John 6, and he made it really relevant to now. And I was like, that's so weird that you've done that with your really old book. Because he was saying, he said this particular thing where he went, sometimes people say to me, like, well, if Jesus was standing in front of me right now, I would believe that he exists. And he was like, but actually, this bit of the Bible shows us that even back then, when he was standing in front of them, some people didn't believe who he was.
So
and he was, he was like, this is why I love the Bible. It just explains so much of like life around us and how people are and what we're like. And I was like, that's interesting. And then it was the end of a sermon series, which meant we had a Q&A. And because of the size of the congregation, like the phone number goes up, so you can text in your question, and someone asks William the questions then. And I was really shocked that this guy was so confident in what he was saying that he was willing to be anonymously questioned on it in real time. And I was like, that's weird, because I always thought of the guy in the pulpit as being like, they've got this sort of ultimate authority that you can't question.
Yes.
And that was kind of one of my problems with it, was like, I think they're all pretty fallible, so why is that guy better than everyone else? But actually people could say, what about this or what about that? And he would answer them, you know, and you didn't even have to be brave enough to stick your hand up. Like, you just text, could just it text.
In. Yeah.
And I was really surprised by that as well. And then, had food afterwards, chatted to people. And then as I came back, when people remembered who I was, my name, what I said I'd get up to that week, and, you know, just genuinely interested in me, I thought, and the fact that they weren't trying to sort of push anything, you know, at me, it wasn't like, they were literally just trying to get to know me, and be really welcoming. And, I found that really unusual. So that was kind of my first experience at church. I then, you know, I came along, I was invited to lots of like kind of social stuff.
And did you go regularly and then from there on?
Pretty much. I tried out a couple of the other services. I wanted to know if it was still interesting if my friend wasn't there.
Yeah.
And if that was different, and actually like people were just as friendly. But kind of settled on the 6 p.m. And when sort of September came around, so term starts, my friend had said, oh, you know, you should join RML. RML is what we call our small groups. And I'd been along to her RML group at first. She sort of dared me. She was like, you can come along if you like. And I was like, nah. And she was like, oh, you're scared. And I was like, no. So again, knew her audience.
Very well.
Yeah. I knew that, well, at least my impression was that RML was Christians. They prayed at the end. And I thought praying was super weird, like really, really weird. Yep. So I was like, and I knew it was a year long commitment. And I was like, no. But then around November time, they did a Christianity Explored course. And, you know, that was 7 weeks. And I was like, okay, I could do that. So went along to that. Initially I found that really frustrating because they kept wanting to talk about Jesus. And I was like, no, but I want to know about the gay thing. And I want to know about like why there aren't any dinosaurs in the Bible. And I want to know, like, you know,
get to the point, get to the fact.
Jesus. Yeah.
Yes.
In hindsight, I'm like, obviously we need to know who Jesus is first and foremost. But at the time I found it a little bit frustrating. But what I was, again, really surprised by was how the people that served in Christianity Explored treated me and like the time that they had. So like Ruth, my leader, like if I couldn't come 1 week because of work, then, you know, she'd go, hey, come to my house. Like, when can you come around? Like, I'll catch you up on what we talked about. And I was like, wow, like you already devoted 1 week. Get like a weekday of your, you know, to this, and now you're kind of, you know, again, I found that really odd. And then kind of come Christmas time, it was first carol service, where I went along and I was blown away, absolutely blown away. You know, there's like 1,000 people in the building, and I didn't sing. Okay, so at this point, I never sung at church because I was like, I don't believe those words, so I'm not singing them. And actually what I had to do is I had to put my hands in my pockets because I quite enjoyed the music, but and I'd want to clap at the end. So for like the first few months, I'd have to like stick my hands in my pockets and go, don't clap. But I wouldn't sing. So this first carol service, again, there's me, but like with my mouth wide open because I'm like, this is mad. Like there's like 1,000 people here, and this is just one church building in, you know, one city. And there's so many of them all over the world. And we're celebrating like the birthday of someone who died like 2 millennia ago. And I just thought that's mad. Like you think of anyone who's famous now.
That's true. Like, yeah.
We're not going to be celebrating their birthday in 2,000 years time.
No, not at all.
Like Beyonce, nobody care about her in 2,000 years time, you know?
No.
Like, and I just thought you know, especially like kind of this, you know, he's from Palestine. And we're in England, like,
yeah, it's not even, you know, relevant, like culturally, yeah, or
yeah, yes,
like geographically, and, no.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I was thinking about during this service, this carol service, and I was like, they can't all be crazy, you know, and so that really played on my mind. And by then I'd met lots of Christians who are way cleverer than me, you know, like they've got PhDs from, you know, Oxford and Cambridge, and like, and I'm like, okay, yeah, like I can't just chalk this up to people being a bit stupid. Like, yeah, there are people here who are way, way cleverer than I am, whose job is to be really analytical.
Yeah.
but yeah, so that was a bit odd. And then afterwards, we went to the pub. That's what you do, right, in England in the winter. I was in a conversation with my physio friend's brother and another guy who I'd not met before. And he said something that assumed I was a Christian. And I was like, whoa, I'm not a Christian. And he said, if you're not a Christian, what are you? And I said, not an atheist. And because by this point, I'd realized that I thought it was definitely possible that God existed.
Yeah.
And he said, well, if you're not an atheist, you're a theist. And I kind of laughed. And at this point, my friend had been listening in, and she turned around and said, Tracy knows that Jesus died for her. And this guy just went, well, if you know that, you're a Christian. And again, I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. And then
you're like, no, I'm not going to be one of them.
But then I was cycling home and I thought, oh crap, that I do think that, you know.
That's so cool.
And it, yeah, and him just sort of making it really, like, it becoming clearly so simple. Because,
yeah.
And I thought, because doing Christianity Explored, I was like, well, I've got all these questions, and, you know, some of them really aren't being addressed here because we're talking about Jesus so much. But I've got to, you know, and I've got to work all these things out before I make a decision about this, you know. I sort of thought, oh, I've got to read the whole Bible, and, you know, all these questions I have about, you know, like random things of, you know, what on earth is the deal with the flood, you know, like all this kind of stuff. Like, I've got to work that out, and then I'll you know, be able to say whether I think this is right or not. And then that conversation just making it really clear that actually by then I had realized that I did think that Jesus was a real person, and I did believe that he was who he said he was.
And that's the spirit of work in you, you know, like the fact that you were going to church and all these things, and you're still going back all the time. Like, it's incredible.
Yeah. So that was kind of when I realized I'd become a Christian. And then I knew I had to deal with the gay thing, because when I was, you know, I brought it up with my friend a few times and I couldn't get kind of a satisfying kind of chat out of that. It was just really frustrating. And, you know, this kind of, but it isn't fair, and like, what, you know, and so we put it on the back burner, because I was like, look, this just gets in the way of this, what is quite interesting intellectual discussion.
I was going to say, I think it is really important as well for like listeners listening to realize, start with Jesus. Like, you don't need to go straight into all the ins and outs of everything else. Like, I think that's a really powerful part of your testimony, is that they're like, let's just focus on the truth, which is Christ, you know?
Yeah.
And then let's address all the other stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, as frustrating as I found that at times, like, just stick with it, because, like, you know, I basically couldn't get my head around it in these conversations. And that's because it's just weird if you don't understand who Jesus is.
That's right, because he's the one.
Like, it makes no sense.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, because talking about how your life should look isn't going to make any sense without Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, but then obviously when I realized I'd become a Christian, I was like, oh, I've got to deal with it, because if I tell anybody this, they're going to go, but you're gay.
And did they all know? Did they all know?
Because I was like, this is the thing. Like, because I realized I was gay when I was 12. I then like dealt with that over that kind of period of time being a teenager, moved to London, had this kind of, you know, like a 4-year relationship. Like, it was not a big deal in my head anymore. Yeah. And so it really, it was not a thing I was weird about.
Yeah, you weren't hiding it or anything.
Yeah, exactly. And Yeah, but I did realize I kind of, well, now what? Because I went and asked one of our curates, Charlie, if I could chat to him about it. And so he did. And what I expected him to say was, like, that it's a lifestyle choice. Because that's what I hadn't heard any of these Christians say it, but I'd heard other Christians say that. That it's a lifestyle choice, and that, you know, kind of got to choose to be straight. And I already knew that I was going to be angry about that, because I was like I tried, you know, like I lived in Holland when I was 18, and I thought if I just have loads of sex with boys, then it will go away, and you know, and I'll be normal. And you know, so I was going to say, like, that just can't be right, because this is just like, I've never ever kind of had that sort of intimate attraction to a guy, you know, like, yeah. and it just feels weird to me. And so to kind of say, this is, you just gotta think differently, wasn't gonna cut it. But he didn't say that at all. You know, he was clear about what the Bible said about sex and marriage. And actually, that's the thing that struck me right from the beginning of coming along, actually, was that I worked out early on that the people at church who were dating weren't sleeping with each other. Yes. And I thought that was the most mental thing ever. Like, that there were this group of like 20 to 30 year old Londoners who, you know, were voluntarily not having sex, yes, with the person that they're dating. And that, like, this whole idea of you move in when you get married, like, that was so, like, when I talked to her about, like, kind of what the Bible said about homosexuality, none of that was a surprise. Okay. None of it was a surprise. But when I heard all this stuff about kind of
sex and marriage,
sexual purity in general, I was like, you people are insane. Like,
that's so interesting. I was so shocked. Okay. You didn't. Okay. Yeah.
Right. And, but it just made me think, like, okay, at least what I knew was, this isn't a double standard.
Yes. And it showed that the church really upheld marriage and what marriage should look like, right? Without even going into the homosexuality thing, it was like,
yeah.
Yes. That's really interesting.
Exactly. Yes. So, yeah, I thought I found that so weird. It's like, you know, and you know, there's some, and I know, like, people struggle with temptation, and you know, that's not to say, like, we're all winning at that, but just that kind of concept that people were, you know, that was what they were striving to do. I just thought it was so weird. And it was one of the things that made me kind of curious about this bunch of people who chose to live in this really odd way. But so when I spoke to Charlie about the gay thing, he was really clear. He just said, look, you know, the Bible says that sex is for marriage and that marriage is for a man and a woman. He said, but temptation and sin are two different things.
Yes.
And that helped me so much. He said, you know, he's like, and the thing is, he said, even, you know, people that are married, that doesn't mean that they're never tempted.
That's
again.
Right. Look at the porn industry.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's huge. There was a study done in the US, and I mean, this is a conservative figure, but over 70% of men are watching porn on the weekly basis within the church. And I mean, I can say that's probably a conservative figure. That was the people that were honest enough to answer that. So yeah, the temptation is, doesn't matter what stage of life you're in, it's there.
Exactly. And he sort of said, you know, if I'm attracted to another woman, he said, you know, that temptation is there. He's like, I then have a choice. I can choose to honor God, to honor my wife, to turn away from that temptation. Or I can kind of ignore that and, you know, indulge it. And then that's the sin, isn't it? And obviously, you know, like, kind of, we all know of situations where people, you know, they kind of run after their temptation and don't, justify, like even in sort of the secular world, if you're saying actually I'm committed to this one person, but lots of places that that's not upheld. And so he said, similarly, the fact that you're attracted to other women is in itself not sinful. It's what you do when that temptation is there that matters. You can choose to honor God and turn away from that temptation to flee sexual immorality, or you can, you can go after it. And he said, and that is the choice that you make at that point. And I was, so in that sense, it was really anticlimactic, because I thought that, again, that makes lots of sense. And it didn't mess with kind of my understanding of my sexuality. And it also didn't make it a bigger deal, because he was like, actually, we're all tempted to sin sexually.
Yes.
So yeah. it's a different, it plays out how that plays out.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It's different for each individual. Yeah.
Mm.
Yep.
And so then I was like, okay, great, fine. When are you baptizing people?
That's awesome.
There you go.
That's incredible. Okay, and that wraps up part one of our two-part series on same-sex attraction. So you've just heard Tracy's testimony. The next episode will be addressing all the questions. What does it look like as a church to support those with same-sex attraction? How do we share the gospel with our friends and family that are gay? How do we work through supporting those that are maybe struggling with that? Hey, we even talk about, if you're listening to this, if you're someone that has same-sex attraction, but maybe you're feeling isolated, you can't share it with your church family, I don't know, maybe you're struggling with it, maybe you're not, how can you walk in faith and in boldness in that? And we also talk about resources that are available. We talk about how the church is to speak out on this topic. We also we just talk about a whole lot of life stuff that really impacts this. So I hope you're going to be tuning into that next episode. That'll be out next week. Or those of you listening later on down the track, it's already out and available for you. In the meantime, I know I sound like a broken record every episode, but if you can leave a review for us on iTunes or on Spotify, it really helps the algorithm. It means then that people can find this podcast and be able to hear some biblical truths and be challenged, I guess, on some different views and opinions that may not be out there. I also really appreciate it if you can follow us on Instagram. That's where I post everything, and everything then goes onto Facebook as well. But outside of that, look, if you liked this episode, share it with your friends and family. I really hope it encouraged you, and I really hope it just pushes us further into God. All right, I'll see you. No, I won't see you. I will speak to you for the next episode.